Hey, all Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? A buck and a half? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow. And thanks, y'all. All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. On the line, I've got the great Gareth Porter. Hey, Gareth, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Scott. Glad to be back.
Good, good. Very happy to have you here. Now, listen up, everybody. Gareth Porter, he's my very favorite. He's the very best. And he's also the author of Manufactured Crisis, The Truth Behind the Iran Nuclear Scare, which is the book on the Iran nuclear program. How it was never a weapons program, what America knew and when they knew it, and the politics behind all the lies and all the sanctions and the deal and the rest. It's really great. Manufactured Crisis, go down in history as the definitive book on Iran's nuclear program in the late 20th and early 21st centuries. There's that. And then there's also this at Consortium News, Obama's moderate Syrian deception, of course, also reprinted at antiwar.com under Gareth's name. You just find it in the right margin there. Well, you start out here quoting Obama on the Syrian fantasy. And so I just want to play that clip real quick. It's Barack Obama talking to Tom Friedman.
With respect to Syria, it's always been a fantasy, this idea that we could provide some light arms or even more sophisticated arms to what was essentially an opposition made up of former doctors, farmers, pharmacists, and so forth, and that they were going to be able to battle not only a well-armed state, but also a well-armed state backed by Russia, backed by Iran, a battle-hardened Hezbollah. That was never in the cards. And so
what is America's policy in Syria? I mean, start, if you want, you could go back to 2006, or you could start with 2011, or start with right now, or whatever you think we need to know to understand, because, you know, I understand bits and pieces, but I don't know if I could put it in a paragraph, or even a whole article.
I don't know if anybody can put it in a paragraph, Scott. I mean, this is really a fascinating mystery, a puzzle to be solved, and part of the puzzle is, And that was a very, very interesting quote from Obama about the fantasy of creating moderate.
You know what? Let me play one more for you here real quick. It's Ben Swan, who is a local TV news reporter at the time, and he asked Obama, I'm afraid I edited him out of this clip, and I shouldn't have, but he asked Obama, you're using drones to attack and kill Al-Qaeda targets in Pakistan and Afghanistan and in Yemen, and Obama says, uh-huh, and he says, but you're back in their same side, at least, in the civil war in Syria. So that seems confusing, Mr. President. Could you please explain? And Obama said this.
I share that concern, and so...
Oh, and pardon me, this is in the spring of 2012.
I share that concern, and so what we've done is to say we will provide non-lethal assistance to Syrian opposition leadership that are committed to a political transition, committed to an observance of human rights. We're not going to just dive in and get involved with a civil war that, in fact, involves some elements of people who are genuinely trying to get a better life, but also involve some folks who would, over the long term, do the United States harm.
And this is about a year into his CIA operation to arm these guys. But so
right,
now I'll
right.
get back to uninterrupting you. Please go ahead, sir.
But I mean, you really framed this, I think, very, very well, because this is yet another sign of Obama's reluctance to go down that path, even as his government, his administration, was indeed doing precisely what you said, that is providing lethal assistance to the armed opposition, at that point increasingly taking on jihadist colors in Syria. And, you know, no one, as far as I can tell, really understands precisely what was going on within that administration. But clearly there were two very, very different points of view about Syria. Obama represented, as I said, reluctance to get into arming the opposition because he knew that it would, in fact, strengthen the al-Qaeda franchise in Syria, al-Nusra Front, based on the Afghanistan precedent. I mean, this is well documented. And we know that it was Hillary Clinton who led the position within that administration to arm the Syrian opposition in conjunction with Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey. And she, of course, was allied at that point with the director of the CIA, who was our friend who used to, be commander of CENTCOM and the commander in Iraq and then in Afghanistan, Petraeus. And so there was a struggle going on, a fierce political struggle within that administration between two points of view, and it looks like Obama caved in to the Clinton position, which was first of all to provide the covert aid. And by the way, this interview that you have played takes place just on the eve of the Kofi Annan initiative to try to bring about a ceasefire heading towards a political settlement in Syria. And this is something I'm now getting into. I haven't started to write about, but I'm researching. And so this two-line struggle, if you will, within the administration, the Obama administration, was particularly important to the failure of the Kofi Annan mission, the Kofi Annan effort to promote a ceasefire. And I won't go into that further, but I just want to point out that that this is the background for my story, which is, of course, about the fact that, after 2012, particularly, the U.S. government went into more and more support for arming the rebels. And this then brings us to the current situation, which is the context for my article, and that is the John Kerry declaring that there's not going to be any ceasefire agreement going into effect unless the Russians agree to cease their attacks on what he calls the legitimate armed opposition. And so my article really goes into the deception that statement represents, a deliberate deception, obviously, because the armed opposition that he's talking about, the folks who have been getting CIA weapons for the last couple of years now, are, in fact, part and parcel of the al-Qaeda franchise in Syria, that is the al-Nusra Front's military apparatus that has been carrying on, an increasingly ferocious war in Syria. And they are not separated from the al-Nusra Front and Ahrar al-Sham operations, either physically, geographically, or organizationally. They are, in fact, fully partners in that. They coordinate their military operations with al-Nusra Front. They are located, they are co-located in some cases with al-Nusra Front, Ahrar al-Sham troops. And so it is really impossible for Russia to carry out any operation to separate the al-Nusra Front center, which is Aleppo, the city of Aleppo, from the Turkish border. That's the whole point of this offensive, of this campaign. So it is absolutely unrealistic and deceptive to talk about legitimate armed opposition units as though they were separate from al-Nusra Front. That's the point of this article.
Hold it. We'll be right back. Hey, all, Scott here. The thing is, I need you guys to help me to get these download numbers up. So do me a favor and sign up for the podcast feeds of this show. You can choose the whole show or just the interviews at iTunes and Stitcher. All the buttons you need are at the top of the right margin at scotthorton.org. The more subscribers I have, the more iTunes and Stitcher will help promote the show to new listeners. If you're a hardcore fan, brand new or from way back, please leave them customer ratings and reviews, too. Trying to get these wars ended. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Talking with Gareth Porter. Yeah, it is the same old thing for the last 5 years on this show, and that's the thing of it. We've been covering this thing all along. And, you know, of course, with the likes of the few former CIA heroes like Phil Giraldi and Ray McGovern and Flint Leverett, who dared to tell the truth about the national security state and what it's up to, and must have been 3 years ago, or two and a half or so at least, 2013, maybe even 2012, where I got this quote out of Flint Leverett, said, hey man, this whole thing about the Saudis are sending them all the guns, and we're just training them and this and that, we're just giving them, you know, trucks and food aid and medical aid and whatever. This is just, you know, as in the Reagan administration, as they would call it, plausible deniability, right? Like getting the Israelis to sell missiles to the Ayatollah for them. Doesn't mean it wasn't Ronald Reagan doing it. People hardly even mention the Israelis, and not just because it was the Israelis involved, but because it doesn't matter whether he got the Israelis to help him do it or not. It was still Reagan dealing with the Ayatollah in a way, you know, so the point is Flint Leverett said, yeah, exactly, that's what this is. This is a former, you know, National Security Council official, highest level type analyst at the CIA, saying that's exactly what this is plausible deniability to build up this army. Of course, we have the DIA documents from August of 2012 saying that this is what's happening, is they're going to create an Islamic State in eastern Syria, and there's a danger that they could overrun western Iraq as well. They knew it all along. So, you know, to say even today, to stick with this this narrative that, you know, there's these mythical moderates that we're supporting. Jeb Bush in the debate the other night slammed the Russians. They said they're just going to bomb ISIS, which they didn't say, but they're bombing our guys too. He's talking about al-Nusra, who are still, if you ask them, they're not loyal to Jeb Bush. They're loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City. Right, Gareth?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the truth that that the power elite in Washington dares not say. I mean, it's a remarkable collapse of the entire narrative surrounding U.S. policy in the Middle East, which, you know, if it were fully discussed and understood by the American public, you know, this entire endeavor in the Middle East would be through. I mean, they would have to pack up and leave. I mean, that's the way I view it.
It should be anyway. Yeah. Well, and God help us, the closest thing we're getting to the truth of this on the national political level right now is Donald Trump saying, you don't know who you're backing there. When he could take it one notch further and say, you're backing the al-Nusra Front is who you're backing, and we all know who they are, the guys who knocked the towers down. Let's get back to the Bushes and their al-Qaeda policy again. You know, this is important stuff.
Yeah, you're right, and I would like to see Bernie Sanders go as far as Trump has gone, and hopefully he will before this campaign is finished. I mean, it's in his interest to clarify the difference between his own position and that of Hillary Clinton. So, yeah. You know, I think there's every reason to think that will happen.
Although they completely set him up for it in the last debate, and he absolutely balked and instead talked about Cuba. And they were like, do you want to criticize Hillary Clinton's Syria policy? And he's like, no. So
I thought he did. I mean, he did in the
little
before. But anyway, I mean, there's every reason. I mean, Hillary Clinton was the central force politically within the Obama administration, pushing the line that we now see the full fruits of in Syria to go ahead and arm the opposition and to push regime change to the fullest. Again, I mean, obviously Obama somehow or other went along with this, despite the fact that he as publicly, as you've pointed out in this clip, sharing that clip with us, clearly indicated that this was not a good idea.
Yeah, and for all the exact right reasons. I mean, yeah, you know, no doubt about it. Well, so now this goes a bit beyond where we are in your article here, but I wonder if you could help us understand what you think, at least, is going on as far as Turkish and Saudi intervention against
right.
the new consensus that America and Russia want to see, you know, a ceasefire. Well, they want to see Raqqa sack and the Islamic State kick the hell out of Syria, apparently. I don't know if they agree on who should occupy the place after that, but apparently the Turks do not agree to this. And so I don't know.
Well, I mean, clearly the Turks, neither the Turks nor Saudi Arabia has any real interest in fighting ISIS. I mean, that's definitely not what they're about. You know, they both have their own political military interests, and they are in the case of Turkey, to deny the Kurds any additional. I mean, they don't want them to have any mini state in Syria, and definitely not a mini state that extends further to the west, abutting the Turkish Syrian border. So, I mean, that's why they are prepared, or they're at least threatening to intervene in Syria militarily. And as far as the Saudis are concerned, I mean, you know, if they were to send troops to Syria, it would be for the purpose of trying to help their clients, the jihadists and their allies, to try to overthrow the Assad regime. But that still leaves open the question whether this is really a serious plan or simply a feint. And I would just point out that both the Turks and the Saudis have publicly stated very clearly that they would not do anything with regard to ground troops in Syria unless this were part of a coalition effort, of course, led by the United States.
Right.
So if this were to happen, it would be because the United States has made a decision to go in on the ground in a major way. And I don't think, I still, you know, I understand that the United States put in special operations forces on the ground in Syria, but I don't think that they're prepared to have the kind of operation that would involve Turkish troops and Saudi troops in Syria. I may be wrong about that. I'm not, you know, that's not a firm conviction, but that's the way it looks to me right now.
In other words, our military is basically fighting with the Kurds against the Islamic State. The CIA is backing the terrorists against Assad, but that's not the same as putting in the army there. Yeah, you would have only the CIA would be allied with the Turks and the Saudis on that one, but maybe not the Pentagon.
Well, I mean, I think that, as I understand what you said, I think it's true. It's extremely complicated. As I pointed out in a previous article, the CIA has been supporting the Kurdish outfit that does, in fact, control a very large area abutting the Turkish border in the northern Syria, because they have been the most effective fighting force against ISIS. But that same military force, the Kurdish military force, the YPG, also worked closely with the Assad regime against ISIS, and in some cases against some of the forces that have been trying to overthrow the Assad regime that the United States is supporting. So, you know, this gets extremely complicated, and you know, that makes it much more difficult to come up with very firm predictions about how this is going to play out.
Yeah, it really is insane. I mean, well, back to the feint. It's hard to take seriously that a Saudi army is going to do anything to anybody except lose to the Houthis, as they're doing on their own ground right now on the Arabian Peninsula. So I don't know what the hell they're actually supposed to really be able to carry out. And it just seems counterintuitive to think that Erdogan would go so far as to really pick a real war with Russia in Syria, and especially when Obama seemingly has allowed his bluff to be called by the Russians. They called it. What the hell is he going to do about it? As Kerry said, what do you want me to do? Go to war with Russia? Kerry actually said that.
Right, right.
So in other words, well, our bluff is called. We're backing down, right?
You know, a reasonable interpretation of both the Turkish and Saudi announcements of their intentions is that they are trying to prod the United States to get in further into the war on the ground. I mean, in other words, they're saying, okay, you want us to do something? You know, show us the money. You know, and basically, you know, come up with a plan that is going to involve U.S. troops to go in to overthrow the ISIS regime, the ISIS state, and then we'll join. And so, I mean, I think that's a real possibility. It's a good possibility that that's what's going on.
Yeah, they're all as confused as former Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel, who said, hey, what's our Syria policy? And they showed him the door. We don't have one that we're willing to articulate. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah. And again, I mean, my understanding, my interpretation is that the reason that it's so impossible to decode what's really going on with U.S. policy in any definitive way is that it is, in fact, a policy. There isn't a single policy. There are competing policies going on.
Right.
There's back and forth between John Kerry, who, by the way, you know, at this point does, in fact, represent the Hillary Clinton policy, as far as I can see, with some amendment. But basically, he is in line with the Hillary Clinton view of what the United States should do. But I think he has been subject to White House limitations because the White House doesn't really support that. Therefore, that tension between the two views on what the United States should do sort of continues to inform what the United States is doing and what the United States is not doing. This is still, to my mind, the subject that the U.S. news media should have been probing and coming up with a good sort of investigative overview of what's really going on in U.S. policy. But they don't really have any interest in doing that because it would then blow their access to both sides of the policy struggle that's been going on.
Yeah. So, you know, I get it. There's a lot of groupthink and this and that, and there are very vested special interests who have anti-Assad agendas that, you know, can never be quenched short of, you know, his lynching on the side of the road, Gaddafi style, because they put Israel first or whatever their interests are. Usually it's that. But for the rest of everybody in on this consensus, oh, Assad must go, all this kind of thing, it's hard for me. Well, let me try to make a comparison. The communications between Anne-Marie Slaughter and Hillary Clinton, that's from the New America Foundation, warmonger, yeah, humanitarian interventionist lady, Anne-Marie, yeah, Slaughter, and Hillary Clinton, her big sister, saying, oh, what a great job convincing Obama to do the Libya war to save the people from Gaddafi, blah, blah, blah. Like, you can convince me, like watching Chewbacca in a Star Wars movie, I can suspend my disbelief and I can say, okay, that's a Wookiee, not an Englishman in a suit, that's a Wookiee. Well, this is a liberal who really is pro-war because she thinks it's good for people, and who, if you try to confront her with, but what about that article in the Telegraph about the guy saying, yeah, we're veterans of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, where we're soaked in the blood of American soldiers, and we're the ones that you're fighting for against Gaddafi, thanks for the help, that she could somehow just block that out, somehow, you know, and just minimize it, spin it, rationalize it. They're the smallest part of the insurgency. That's not really a thing. Okay, like, I'm suspending my disbelief for 2011 here, Gareth, but now help me with 5 years of backing Al-Qaeda in Syria when Golani is saying, I love Zawahiri over and over and over again, and no less than, I don't know, 100,000 people in Washington, D.C. and in the suburbs there endorse this policy of backing the guys who hit the Pentagon and knocked down the goddamn towers in 2001. Seriously.
Okay, I've got a good answer for your question, Scott. What's really been going on for the last few years is that Anne-Marie Slaughter, Susan Rice, and Samantha Power have all been positioning themselves to become the Secretary of State under Hillary Clinton administration.
Absolutely.
That's the answer to your question.
Right, but so that explains her ability to win out over her doublethink and triumph and love Big Brother in 2011. But I'm talking about everybody in D.C. Tens and tens and tens of thousands of people in D.C. All the Congress, all their staffers, all the CIA and DIA and or whatever, Pentagon people, DOD people who are going along with this policy, all the National Security Council people who are going along with this policy. You know, I know. I'm sorry. I don't want to sound all hyperbolic and like silly on your interview here, because I'm not like some kind of birther saying Obama is a Muslim and they're all guilty of treason in that sense. But I'm saying they are guilty of treason in the same sense that they are continuing Reagan's policy of the 80s in a post September 11th era, where they're using these Saudi terrorist shock troops basically to get their dirty work done. And yet that's not okay now, is all I'm saying. But they're doing it. And I just wonder how that many grown adults can really deal with the dissonance going on with that. They must have some. They know who Golani is. They know that al-Nusra. They can read it in the paper. Even David Sanger said.
Scott, listen. Everybody you're talking about in Washington, all of the above named groups that you're talking about, have vested interests of one kind or another in supporting the status quo. And I mentioned what I think are the most prominent ones, the most powerful people we're talking about here, the three ladies who worked under Hillary Clinton and who, of course, wanted to get her support to be the next Secretary of State under a Clinton administration. They have extremely powerful personal reasons, and everything else disappears into the ether in the face of personal and institutional vested interests. That's my answer, and I think that explains everything. That explains everything about the national security state, in my view.
So, in other words, my little metaphor there about how they could rationalize this stuff in a much shorter time frame and in circumstances, narrower circumstances in Libya in 2011, the confusion or the dissonance there, it doesn't change. It doesn't get worse even after 5 years of the same policy. It's still, there is no break in the consensus and the agreement that this is what must be done, even with all the new information coming in showing how bad it is.
There's an agreement to, as I quote, in my article, sort of turn our heads away from the truth in order to achieve both, the national goal and the personal goals of the people in question. Yep. So that's, the very most general way to sort of categorize this phenomenon.
It is really something to behold. Listen, I kept you way over. Thank you so much, Gareth. You're the best.
All right, my pleasure. Thanks, Scott. Bye-bye.
All right, y'all. That's Gareth Porter, Obama's moderate Syrian deception. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson, Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.